Welcome to the Institute for Story podcast. My name is Dee Daniels, and I can't wait to tell you a story. Very excited to welcome my next guest, Chuck Chuning, over 30 years experience in many things, including luxury residential, hospitality, preservation, interior design. And he's got so many stories to tell, I'm sure. So I'm hoping he will share a few while we're talking on this episode. Chuck, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Dee. I'm very delighted to be here.
This is wonderful that you have become such a big part of Institute for Story and, of course, StoryCon, and so many wonderful things that happen along with that. We're looking forward to this year's StoryCon as well, coming up in June. Let's talk a little bit about you. Where did your story begin for interior design?
I think my story began as a child. It was something I had a love for, especially architecture. Architecture was a real love. I was one of those children that sat on the floor and sketched house plans, you know, and begged my parents to take me to go look at houses being built or just buildings in general. And so I know I had an early development of just love of architecture, building, and design. And so that was sort of nurtured. My parents were wonderful about nurturing that and what I wanted to do and go and see. And so as I got into high school, I developed that even more with the intent of going to Georgia Tech to major in architecture. So I did all the core curriculum that I hated of physics, calculus, trig, all of that. And really, I was so much more of a creative person, artistic, but I was like, I need to do this. I did it. Got to Georgia Tech my first year, freshman year, and absolutely hated it. I hated the program. I hated the aesthetics. I hated everything about it. And I thought, how can this be? This is something I absolutely love. It's just part of my soul. And so I started doing a lot of searching and trying to figure out, okay, how can I save this? How can I make this work? And in my research, I discovered this little startup college in Savannah, Georgia, called the Savannah College of Art and Design. Mm. And part of their program was historic preservation of architecture. And it was the only school at that time in the U.S. that was offering an undergraduate degree in historic preservation. So I made the decision to transfer from Georgia Tech to SCAD my second year of college, and went into a totally different environment, one that I thrived, that was nurturing, it was creative. The core foundation was not physics and calculus. It was actually art history and architectural history and the arts in general. And so with that, along with the program of historic preservation and architecture, it was my senior year that I started looking at interiors, and had always had an interest of interiors, but I think realized logistically it just made sense that I pursue interior in addition to the architecture, because the two dovetail together. What I was wanting to do was restoration work, which involved, okay, the exterior of the building, but more importantly, the interior of the building, so that it was carried through and comprehensive and cohesive. So I decided to double major. My father accused me of wanting to be a professional student. but of course, was behind it full, you know, 100%. And I did a interiors degree, and I really tailored and focused it on preservation and restoration, which, being in the small academic environment, I was able to do. And so I graduated in end of 1986 with two degrees.
Wow.
And fortunately, also during my tenure as a student, I had always, just in my curiosity of knowledge and wanting to know more, had attended every lecture, every event, every opportunity that came our way. And in doing so, I had met various professionals that would be key to what I would do after I graduated. So I was hired by Hirschbedner Associates, which is a company that's based actually in LA. They focus on luxury hospitality. And so I was interviewed by them. All I had was my schoolwork I had actually interned with an architect when I was in school who was also very instrumental in the restoration of a lot of historic buildings in Savannah itself. So, and he had been schooled in the 1920s in the Beaux-Arts and just a wonderful mentor and gentleman. So I had that experience coming out of school. And so I interviewed with Hirschbedner, and they, interestingly enough, looked at my schoolwork and sort of what I had accomplished and said, "You're hired."
Wow.
And so from that point, my world just turned upside down because I was hired by a global company and they were having actually more historic properties and projects come into their world. And so the first job I was handed was in Istanbul, Turkey.
Oh my gosh.
And the meetings were in Paris. So really my world went from this very small little startup college to working for a global company and hopping on an airplane and going to, you know, meet all kinds of people and work in all kinds of cultures. So it was a very exciting time. I was there for 16 years. And in that time, I really created my niche within the company of doing what I had always wanted to do, which was historic properties, the restoration, which would involve not only a historic property, but something that might be new build, but had the references of history to it and the culture.
Well, I mean, obviously you've had a wonderful hand in doing a lot of that in Savannah and in so many other places. You know, I know obviously you continued to travel and do those things. And now back here with your footprint in Savannah and your hands and all of that, you know, I think Savannah is such a great place to really pull together exactly what you were doing in your life and wanting to do that tell someone else's story from the past and bring it to life in a new way. I would imagine SCAD had a big part in showing you how to do that and bringing that up to the surface for you.
Absolutely. I mean, SCAD not only was a place and institution for learning, actually it was home. I mean, we really became a family there. And I think it was also because of the size of it. And also at the time, everybody that was there, they were eager to be successful. They wanted to be part of this new idea, this sort of new way of education and collaboration. So there was an energy that was happening there that I think very much influenced what I was to do later on. And part of my career took me to other places. So I lived in London. I moved to Milan. I lived in Milan for several years, came back to the US and ended up in New York City for 8 years. And I had all these sort of cultural experiences of living in addition to the projects I was doing around the world. But there was always a draw back to Savannah. And when I left Savannah in graduation, I didn't return for 25 years.
Oh, wow.
And when I came back to the city, I was shocked. I couldn't believe the growth, transformation, and the just care that had finally happened with the, you know, the fabric of the city and the culture of the city. So really, while I was in New York, I came down to do something with SCAD, a collaboration with SCAD, and thought, you know what, I might just look at houses here and see what's available. And of course, that led to buying something. And so sort of the last half of my time in New York, I would hop on a plane on Friday afternoon, fly to Savannah, spend my weekend here, take the early bird Monday morning back to New York. And I always laughed and I said, I got here faster than my friends got to the Hamptons and had a way better time.
Right.
So that was my drawback to Savannah. And then 2016, I moved here full time after my years in New York City and really sort of committed to making this my home in the end.
Yeah. And we're lucky for it, no doubt about it. You know, I think it's very interesting too that a lot of people do that where they leave and come back. I hear that story so much on so many different podcasts that is just people are like, you know, I had something here that was very special and you know, built something and I left and I got even bigger in my career, or bigger in, on my path. And then I came back, and when they come back, they share all of that with Savannah, and it makes Savannah even richer when they come back.
Exactly. And for me, that happened. I mean, I moved here in 2016, but I was still working internationally, and I had very good friends here, close friends that owned the Gray Restaurant. And they came to me and said, you know, we've just bought this house and we need someone to help us do the interiors and do the design. We don't have time for it. Who would you recommend? And I thought, wow, don't know, because you're so cosmopolitan. You've, you know, again, you have these sort of fantastic careers and travel, and you're just, you collect art and you're just very interesting. And after a couple of days, I came back and I said, you know what? I'm the only person that can do this for you, because I really know you. Right. And I know what you want and want to achieve. And I'm willing to take this on, which was a crazy thing for me to do. And I did. And I took it on. And then I had other people start coming to me. Richard Kessler came to me because he had just bought the Armstrong Mansion. And I thought, all of a sudden, I've got to get serious about this. If I'm going to do these projects here in Savannah, then I might need to create a company. I might need to have some structure. I might need some staff. And also, I need to look at what I'm doing in the rest of my career globally and travel and with these other consulting jobs that I have. And so that was my transition. So that was where I really made the choice and decision to really base myself here and take on projects here and develop a business here. So that was a very exciting time, and it just sort of came together, and I'm so grateful for it.
Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking about when you work with people like Kessler, and when you work on a large scale like that, what is that process like? Walk through that process a little bit, as far as, like, you know, how do you start when you go into a big hotel, when you go into a big historic place? How do you preserve what is going on there from well before the owner to, you know, what's going to go on because of the owner, you know, from there?
Right. Well, it's, for me, it was an easy transition in the sense that I had always done large projects, because a lot of my work was hospitality. So I had done hotels throughout the world. And to me, the Armstrong Mansion was a small hotel with a number of spaces and bedrooms and public spaces and private spaces, also with the way the house would be used. So to me, the project felt sort of natural to what I had always done. Working with Kessler was fantastic. I mean, he is such a smart man in so many levels, but also a passionate collector, a lover of architecture and buildings and interiors. So this passion of his just really sort of came to the surface with this house, and something that he really embraced and took on also collectively with the whole team that was doing the restoration. So working alongside with him was really a wonderful experience, because it was putting this together. It was the love of the things that he had collected, sort of curating those together within the spaces, but also that they would be appropriate to the history of the house and the style of the house and sort of the aesthetics and fabric, so that it all fit together, but yet reflected his personality and his collections and the things that he loved. And I remember after the house was finished and everybody had left, and I went over there one evening and he answered the door, and I walk in. All the lights are on in every room. There's music playing throughout. The dining table was still set with china crystal and silver from the photo shoot that had happened a couple of weeks before. And I remember looking at him and I said, Richard, I mean, you know, you look like you're ready for, you know, a big cocktail party. And he said, this is how I live. He said, why would I want to walk around and see dark rooms,
right,
or a dining table with nothing on it? And so he had really brought the house to life. And that's how he lives. He lives alive with the house alive. And that was just a wonderful moment.
Oh, I'm so sure. It's probably one of those moments where you're like, you know, seeing all of this not only come to life for a moment, but stay alive.
Right. Right. Exactly. So it stayed alive. And to me, that's sort of what I want to accomplish with my clients and the projects I do is I always tell them, I said, this is your home. I am not going to live here. Once I finish my work, the photographs are done, I leave. It's yours. It's your home. And you need to be surrounded by the things that you love, the things you've collected, the things that mean something to you. And to me, I've always said a home is your sanctuary. And it becomes really sacred space. I mean, it is personal space, and it really should reflect your soul in that respect. And so that's what I try to do with clients. I try to bring that out of them and bring it into the spaces that they live in, and so that they are surrounded by that.
Yeah, you know, it makes me think of when we made a move from Virginia to Georgia, and you know, my partner had a handful of art pieces that were just so meaningful and, you know, came from Native American artists, came from a local artist from Virginia. And there were ties to those certain pieces. And knowing we were moving into coastal Georgia, you know, we were changing our style of design in our new house. And we certainly did. But there's that core piece of the core pieces that tend to move with you and should move with you, because I think, like, do you start there? Because we did, you know, we're like, okay, we know this is going, and right, everything else kind of takes the flow of the new place.
Right, exactly. I have a client who has since become a really dear friend. And the first time I met her, I went over to the house, and she started by going, you know, she said, I'm so frustrated. This doesn't feel like me. It doesn't look like me. I've worked with other designers and I don't know what's wrong. I don't know why it's not coming together. And out of that conversation, she kept talking about things that meant something to her. Her grandmother's paintings, her secretary, her husband's portrait of his father, his book collection, all of these things that she's talking about personally. And I said, well, where are they? And she said, well, the last designers made me put them in storage so they don't, you know, fit with the design and what we're trying to do here. And I said, okay, the next time I come over, I want you to have everything pulled out of the storage units and brought here. Everything that you love and you've just talked about, bring them here. And that's what we did. I came over, we spent the entire day going through all of these things, which all stayed. They all ended up in the house. So now her grandmother paintings are up the staircase. Aww. Her father-in-law's portrait is hanging in the library, and her husband's books are out, and the secretary is in one of the rooms. And then all of these things, and even quirky things or things that her children made, are there. They're in the house, so that every corner you turn, you know, they are represented. Their life is there. And it's wonderful because all of a sudden the house has personality. It's got this layer of things that mean something. And so when someone else comes in that house, they recognize that that's who they are. This is who they are.
Well, and then, it brings up conversation. You have people over and it brings up telling a story, which is, you know, the connection between the two of us, whoever it is. Once we share a story with each other, you know, we're always connected from there on. And I feel like that's something that is a running theme with what you do, is showing people that their story, their one of their stories, their life stories, can be brought out into their space. Do you agree?
Exactly. It is their story. And that's what it's about. And that's what I do as a designer, is I bring the story out of them. And I sort of elaborate on it and I bring it to life, and it becomes three-dimensional. And so all this layer of history that they have and collectively is brought together. And as you say, that also becomes the catalyst for them to tell their story to other people. So as people come into their space, you know, they look around and there are all of these objects and things that do tell their story and also initiate conversation and history and sort of individual biographies that happen. So I think that's sort of the beauty of what I'm able to do and create for people, because then when I leave, again, like with Richard Kessler's house, it's become alive. Mm. And it's now alive and it stays alive. It doesn't turn on and off.
You know, Chuck, you've been recognized in so many different avenues and magazines and many awards. Do you have a favorite story about a place that you were recognized? I know SCAD has recognized you many, many times as well. Do you have a favorite moment of recognition?
I have to say probably a favorite was I did the restoration of the Gritti Palace in Venice on the Grand Canal. And that was just a dream project, truly a dream project for me. And I had done other work in Venice and of course in Europe, but this was sort of a jewel that I really, really wanted to do. And a lot, again, it was not just a restoration project, but it was a project of putting it back together as it should have been or could have been. And so again, there were many stories woven into doing that project and property, and also the history of famous people that had stayed there have been part of it. So bringing their stories into the spaces themselves. So when it was finished, there were a number of magazines and editors that were vying for the story on this. And I had developed a friendship with the editor-in-chief at Architectural Digest and had really talked about the project as it was unfolding and happening. And through it, she kept saying, "I don't feature hotels. I don't do hotels. We do houses." And it was very funny that by the end of the project, I started sending her photographs and the narrative and the romance behind these spaces. And all of a sudden she said, "Oh my goodness, I can't believe it. This is a home." I mean, it has the stories. It has all of these things that I try and tell in the magazine and in my features. And so she ended up doing a 12-page spread on the property. And what was wonderful is that she titled it Masterpiece Theater. Huh. And which is what it was. It became theater in the sense that all of these spaces were in a way theatrical in a sense, and they told a story and a play and history and all of these things within all of the spaces. And that sort of unfolded in these pages. And it was just really a beautiful story that happened, that sort of was the culmination of these years of putting this back together.
Mm, that is beautiful. And what a great moment to have them feature something like that. And goodness, for 12 pages, there were many stories to tell.
Exactly. Right.
I love that. You know, a lot of people are very, especially in Savannah, are very interested in design, very interested in architecture, very interested in history and art, and putting all those together in a way to elevate not only maybe their career and their goals or their clients' goals, but also to elevate the city and the community. You know, that people are really, really protective here of how, you know, we recognize where we've come from and the original plans of Savannah and, you know, how we've built on that. And the fact that we're still looking at the squares like they were planned, and, you know, it's just a pretty amazing. What do you tell up and coming people into Savannah? How do you advise and sort of give them light as to where they're going and how to go about doing it?
Well, I think, I mean, just what you said. I mean, Savannah has this fantastic history, and also very much the Oglethorpe plan that was created in 1733, and really the basis of the city and how it's grown on that. And so I think that, first of all, people come here because they're attracted to the romance of the city, the architecture of the city, the squares, and which is quite unique with the way we live around those squares. The squares become sort of the communal areas, the common areas between the wards, the neighbors, and all of that. So for me, what's always been very important about design, regardless of where the project is or where I'm working, is a sense of place. I think it should always, regardless of what you're bringing into the project should reflect a sense of place and sort of acknowledge where it is and the respect that location and the surroundings and the culture and all of those elements of location. And so I tell that to clients specifically in Savannah. That's sort of I'd say the starting point is a sense of place. And you are in Savannah and look around you. And this is what's influencing your space and your building. And so to me, again, it's when you come into us in a space, and if you're in Savannah, that while you're in there, you want to be reminded where you are. You want to look around and know that you know where you're still grounded, even though you may see something that has been collected from all over the world or various things that, you know, that there's still acknowledgement to that location. And it's interesting when I did particular house here, the clients, being very cosmopolitan, the one thing they wanted to do was put together an art collection specifically for the house, and it only be from Savannah artists.
Mm.
So we actually worked with Susan Laney and some others to put together this collection, this art collection, with a lot of commissions involved in it by Savannah artists and of all mediums. So it represented a cross section from sculpture to painting to photography. And it just turned out amazing. So that is throughout the house. So that when, again, that's their sense of place among all the other things that are in the house, that there's this collection, this fabulous collection of art that represents Savannah.
I remember when we, before we moved here, we had visited Savannah for years and knew that was going to be our next destination as far as living. And I remember staying in every place we could think of. We wanted to stay everywhere. So we stayed in a big hotel. We stayed on River Street. We stayed in the little Airbnbs. You know, we stayed in the smaller places. And I loved all of the places that had a piece of Savannah in it, you know, somewhere. And I it just made me fall in love with it even more, because we just walked through Forsyth Park and now there's a mural of it on the wall of the Airbnb we're staying at. That's beautiful. I loved how everyone was very respectful of saying, this is the place. And it was that sense of place that you're talking about, bringing it inside and recognizing it and saying, you know, we're part of this. This is part of our community. We're part of this and we're celebrating it. And it meant a lot to us and it made us want to continue to come back. And we made plans of, great, when we live here, we're going to have this on our wall and this on our wall. You know, I mean, it was just wonderful. I love that everybody gets into that here.
Right, exactly. And that's reflects the love that they do have for Savannah and why they're here, why they've committed to be here. And I think that is the beauty of it. Back to the talking about spaces being alive and you know, living interiors. So I think that Savannah encourages that. It inspires that.
Absolutely. And the little startup college that you were at certainly grew while you were away. It has gotten quite large. Yes. What do you think of where we are with SCAD today? I mean, wow.
It's amazing. I think what's wonderful about SCAD today is that I'm still involved in, as President Wallace will call and say, will you do this? Or can you be part of this? And of course, I never say no. Because I'm extremely proud of where the school is today, what it's accomplished, and specifically what President Wallace's vision for the school has done, and to still be able to be here and be part of it sort of in this end of my career, and having been also part of the sort of infancy and the initiation of the startup of it. So that's very, very special. And actually today we're hosting a group of interior design students in my store because they're learning about luxury and what it means to be hospitable, the art of hospitality. And so there are all these things, again, that we're able to contribute by being here in Savannah and in collaborations with SCAD and specifically with the design programs, which is wonderful because, again, it's that nurturing, passing the story on and inspiring students that, like me, when I came to SCAD, are seeking and looking for and wanting to grow and learn, and so that we can actually contribute to that for them.
I'm sure that's going to be quite an honor for them to be there and really just soak all of that in. Talk a little bit about your store and where everyone can find you and seek out the great wisdom that you've got.
Well, the store was an interesting concept. I went to really good friends for dinner last year. And they live in Palmetto Bluff. But what's interesting is they're transplants from New York City. They come out of the sort of editorial world, Vanity Fair, Architectural Digest, sort of those magazines, and ended up falling in love with the Lowcountry and Savannah and Bluffton and built a home there. So they were entertaining, dinner party. I went and everyone was talking about all these wonderful outdoor accessories that they had, these urns and planters and just objects. And we said, well, where in the world did you find these? You know, I know you didn't find them here. And the hostess said, no, I actually found it in, you know, north of Charleston. I was looking and just couldn't, and finally found these and drove them back and et cetera. And so the next morning I woke up and I thought, that's ridiculous. I'm going to open a store. I need to open a store here because we struggled the same with our clients, you know, because in Savannah, the Lowcountry, we spend majority of our time outside in some capacity.
That's right.
You know, we live indoor, outdoor here. And that's the beauty of it, that the climate allows us to do that. So it sort of was seeing a need. And so I decided to do a store that was really focused on outdoor living. So what we do here in the Lowcountry, so that bringing indoor, outdoor together. And so the premise of the store is most things are not breakable. So we have, when it comes to tabletop ware, it's acrylic glasses, melamine plates, paper plates, wipeable linens, and then, of course, all the garden things that you would expect. So urns and planters and tools and those things, and also outdoor furniture, outdoor rugs, outdoor pillows and throws. We have candles. We have lots of faux flowers and plants that go along with that. So everything, that's the premise of everything. And I say it's not specifically for outdoors. It's also for indoors. Is for both. And I laugh and I say a lot of our clientele are sloppy adults.
Well, that's what we like to be when we're outside.
Right. Exactly.
Sloppy in a couple of different ways, but you know, it's whatever the design element can do for us around that, it's always great. And you're right. I mean, that is the joy of living here, being able to have life everywhere we are and experience that, because most of us like to, you know, be outside as much as possible, you know, Thursday afternoon, Friday, whenever we can say, oof, we're going to do the rest of this outside. You know, we all have our meetings outside. We have, you know, when we can have lunch or whatever we need to do, we want to be outside. So to bring that to life here, you're right. You did answer that need very, very much. And obviously that's going very well. I know you're going to be a part of StoryCon again this year. And do you have a little nugget of maybe what you're going to bring to the table this year?
I think, this year it'll be about, interiors as a story, a reflection of who we are personally, and how that story that we tell as a person translates into the way we live and the things that are around us. So I think that's very much the premise. And I think once people realize it's okay to have my things around me and live with them, and that they actually inspire you and create these sanctuaries and these sacred places and these places that are nurturing to the soul and to the person, and also, as you said, something that can be shared with other people and a point of conversation and story. So really, that I think is how it fits into the context of what's happening, and also hopefully inspiring people to sort of look around their spaces again and things that they have in storage or had put away, and start to bring them out and incorporate them back into their life and back into their own personal story. It doesn't have to fit a design aesthetic. It doesn't have to, be magazine worthy.
Right.
I mean, the point of it is that the thing I hate is to go into a space and it have no character or personality in it. If I look around, I cannot find one object that I think, okay, reflects who lives here, whether it's the collection of books or it's the objects, it's the accessories, it's, whatever it may be. And I just think that's just very important to the way we live and who we are.
Well, we're excited to see you at StoryCon and excited to see what you're going to be showing and teaching everyone. And you have so many great things from your stories to share. So I know it's going to be another wonderful year for StoryCon. And of course, everyone can get registered at instituteforstory.com and look for Chuck Tuning this year. It's going to be a lot of fun. Chuck, thank you for taking a moment and sharing your stories with us on the podcast.
Thank you, Dee. Yeah, it's been wonderful.
We are also so proud to showcase the power of story and connection with our community leaders, business owners, anyone from any walk of life at the annual Story Conference. This year, StoryCon 2023 is anticipated to be even bigger and better, Sunday, June 4th through Tuesday, June 6th, and will include a special open community event on Tuesday evening called United Through Story, featuring storytellers and the talents of the Savannah Philharmonic at the Savannah Cultural Arts Center. And thanks to our sponsors and partners, Mi Alma. Mi Alma mobilizes communities to memorialize legacies and support anyone that's experienced the loss of a loved one. Find out more at mialma.com. And our heartfelt thanks to the Hospice Savannah Storykeeping Endowment for supporting this year's Story Conference. For StoryCon 2023 registration and more information, head to instituteforstory.com. And as Dr. Barry says, when you tell a better story, you live a better life.